Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Unending Hope by Cindy K. Stewart. As World War II expands across Northern Europe, a group of dedicated friends are drawn deeper into the struggle to maintain hope in the face of overwhelming adversity. April 1940. Nazi Germany carries out a devastating invasion, trapping Americans David Jensen and Natalie Thompson in Norway. Determined to use their medical skills to aid the Norwegians, David and Natalie embark on a harrowing journey to treat the injured and evade the Nazis. Natalie, a dedicated Red Cross worker, values deep relationships. Fearful of settling for a shallow marriage, she broke off her engagement to David several years earlier. But she never stopped loving him, and spending time working together in Norway plays havoc with her heart. David, a charismatic and confident doctor of the Red Cross, desires to advance his career and rekindle his relationship with Natalie. Even though she once rejected him, he believes she is the only woman for him. But years of keeping others at arm's length guarantees that winning Natalie back will be the biggest challenge he's ever faced.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, I'm talking with Cindy K. Stewart, a retired high school social studies and special education teacher who writes stories of hope, steeped in love, and anchored in faith. So welcome to my show, Cindy.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I'm excited to be here.
So now you write historical romantic suspense, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, that's like, and then, of course, we as Christian writers, we have the faith thread. So that's like four different genres mashed into one. Do you find it difficult to write that many different kind of threads in your stories?
Yes, I do. It is very difficult, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of research, a lot of prayer, a lot of rewriting, and a lot of editing.
I love that you said it, that it is hard. I was thinking, she better say it's hard, because that sounds, if she makes it easy, then the rest of us are going to be like, oh my goodness, that's just too much. Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough writing Christian romantic suspense, because you got the three things going on that I can't imagine trying to add the historical element to it. And most of yours are set in World War II era, is that correct?
Yeah. I have some that I'm working on that are pre-World War II, but they're leading into the World War II series.
So what was it about that era that drew you for the historical part of it?
Well, I love history, and I love to find things that nobody knows about. Mm. And so I love the research that I do for my stories and finding the miraculous things that happened during World War II. And there are so many things. Although it is was a very difficult time period, there were really many wonderful things that happened and many people who stood up to do the right thing. And hope is a very important thing to me, and I can show a lot of hope through stories from World War II.
Oh, I love that, Cindy. That's, you know, and hope is something that we need, no matter if we're writing contemporary, historical, because we can show those threads in our work. And you kind of answered this a little bit, but why romantic suspense? What is it about romantic suspense in general that you like to write about?
I love a lot of action and suspense in stories. So those are my favorite stories to read, along with a good romance, not just a romantic thread, but a good, strong romance. Those are my favorites. So I like combining, and of course, my love for history. So I like combining the history and the romance and the action and suspense and the spiritual part of the story.
So you talked about, you know, you like to do the research to make sure your books are accurate. But how do you stop the research to start the writing? Because I've talked to other historical fiction writers, and they're like, that seems to be, the struggle is real. You know, you can go down rabbit trails. It's one of the reasons that I call myself a lazy writer. I love history myself, but I'm like, I don't have the patience to research it too much, because I think I would just spend all my time researching and not any time writing. So how do you balance those two things?
That is a good question. I keep researching even while I'm writing and while I'm rewriting and while I'm editing and I'm double checking. And sometimes I find new things and I think, oh, I wish I had room to put that in. But sometimes I say, okay, I'll use that in the next story. It is hard to stop researching. And I am working on my third book, researching for my third book right now, third full novel. And I am determined to get more of the research done ahead of time and organize it better so that when I'm writing, I can write faster and pull from that. I recently heard from an author who said she has her research up in order on a separate screen from where she's writing. So she does not have to go anywhere else to find her research. It's right there. She just turns her head, looks at it, keeps writing. And so that's my plan when I start writing this third novel.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a great plan. And I mean, I do a little bit of that. I mean, I still have to do research. Anyone who doesn't do any research is, frankly, an idiot. But we don't have to talk about those kind of writers. You know, but because we all have to do research, you know, to write accurately, because unless you're writing fantasy, but you still have rules in fantasy too. So we all need to follow those and make sure that those things go well. What do you think that is for you? What's the most rewarding thing about writing romantic suspense?
When my readers tell me they couldn't put my book down. That's one of the biggest things. Also, it's taking real things that happen, in my case, because I'm writing historical and it's real important to me to be accurate, taking real things that happen and combining those things from many different sources and many different people's experiences and putting those things with my characters. So my characters end up experiencing a lot of things that happen to many people.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's, I mean, that's what, for me, I love it when readers tell me that my books impacted them, or I like cloaking who's the bad guy until toward the end when my characters find out. So I love that they don't always know that or know why, or, you know, just kind of revealing that. And when I try not to read too many reviews, but occasionally you'll glance at them. I love it when people are like, yeah, I couldn't figure it out, or I thought it was this person, they're trying to be that person. It was so much better, you know, so I'm like, yay, that's always fun. So
yes,
what about,
and
go ahead.
I've had readers say that this story in my previous book took them in directions they weren't expecting, that there were twists that they, and I like that, you know, I like it that people don't, the readers don't actually know what exactly is going to happen to the characters.
Yes, I know that ability to surprise them is always good. So what about the inspiration for your plots? I know you said you like to research and find all those neat little side trips of World War II, but you know, you're still making stuff up. So where's your inspiration for your plots?
Okay, well, my research gets me started. It gets me a long way because I'm telling true stories that really
mm-hmm.
happened. Then I have to follow, my plot has to follow what really happened. And in my latest book, Unending Hope, I have everything down to the very day that the things really happen. There's one exception. I have something starting one day early, later in the book. But that does set for me my parameters and the types of things that are happening. So that does give me a fairly strict outline. The challenge for me then is to make sure that my characters are strong and that they fit into that story in a natural way and not a way where it seems like they're forced into certain actions because of the story. So that's a big challenge for me, but according to my readers, I was able to do that accurately and then still they loved my characters.
Oh, yes. Loving our characters is important. We love them, but we want people to love them too. So we're going to switch gears just a little bit because I love this question. What did you want to be as a child, and did that dream come true for you, Cindy?
I wanted to be a teacher because I wanted to tell stories. I used to line up my teddy bears and my dolls, and then later my neighbor, other children, and made them listen to my stories. So that's what I love about writing, is telling stories. That's the big thing for me. And so I love teaching because I taught many different subjects, especially when I taught history, I got to tell lots of stories.
Well, that's always good that you get to write stories. So I love it when our childhood dreams can come true. So thank you so much for sharing. We are out of time today, but I really appreciate you coming on and talking about your writing on my show today.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It was great to be here.
Now an excerpt from Unending Hope by Cindy K. Stewart. Tuesday, April 9, 1940. Oslo, Norway. The wail of sirens jolted David Jensen awake. He pulled a pillow over his head, but the incessant bellowing continued, ratcheting up his heart rate to match. An air raid alarm. Why are there Norwegians running a practice drill in the middle of the night? He groaned and flipped on the bedside lamp to check the time. 1 o'clock. He climbed out of bed in his fourth-floor room at the Grand Hotel and opened his curtains. The streetlights in downtown Oslo still burned despite the alarm. This was not proper procedure. Then, all at once, the lights blinked off, as if a mighty hand had pulled a switch, dousing the city in total darkness. The sirens continued, howling like a pack of hungry wolves in the night. Something was afoot. David and a few of his former high school classmates had converged on Norway for a wedding. 2 days ago, Anne Johnson married Erik Olsen, an official with Norges Bank and the youngest member of the Norwegian Storting Parliament. David pulled a robe over his pajamas and entered the pitch-black hallway. David? The voice uttering the call captured his attention, the same voice he hadn't been able to ignore for the past 5 days. Hadn't tried to. Right here, Natalie. He couldn't see her, but her nearness added to his already racing pulse. Natalie Thompson hadn't drifted far from David's thoughts since the war began in Poland 7 months ago. He'd missed hearing his name on her lips. Farther down the hall, a door squeaked open. Anyone out here? Jonathan Huntwell was on the prowl. If someone could discover the reason for this disturbance, he could. A flashlight beamed part of the darkness, revealing Natalie standing near him. David squinted at the light shining in his eyes. Any idea what's up, Jonathan? I'm waiting on a return call from a friend at the embassy. Irina is awake. Why don't you two join us? David followed Natalie and Jonathan into the room. Jonathan switched off his flashlight and opened the curtains that covered the glass-paneled doors to the balcony. Soft moonlight illuminated the snow-covered park across the street. Otherwise, darkness greeted them. The wail of the sirens hadn't stopped. How could anyone sleep with all that racket? With the sound of impending doom elevating their blood pressure. Do you think it's a false alarm? A hint of concern tinged Natalie's words. Probably so, David shrugged. No need to panic. Norway's a neutral nation. David remained at the balcony door, peering through the window panes at the dark and distorting building next to the park. He glanced back at Irina and Natalie sitting on the bed close together, their knees bent and arms wrapped around their legs. Best friends since high school. After what seemed hours, the bellowing finally stopped. David rolled his shoulders to ease the tension. Everyone stirred. Jonathan flipped the switch by the door, but the room remained dark. The lights outside stayed unlit as well. Not a good sign. If Norway was under attack, they were all in trouble. Then the telephone jingled, shattering the newfound quiet and shooting fresh adrenaline through David's veins. Jonathan lifted the receiver. Huntwell here. Yes? Yes? They are? Any indication why? Jonathan's voice intensified. Yes, please do. We'll be here. He hung up and inhaled a deep breath. Foreign warships are moving up the Oslo Ford. He cleared his throat. No word on whose ships. Irina gasped. What? No, not here. Her tone quivered. Last year, she'd tangled with the Gestapo and the Luftwaffe in Poland and earned a place on the Nazis' most wanted list. Jonathan's shadow moved across the room and merged with his wife's on the edge of the bed. I'm so sorry, little Katastrofe, he sighed, but these might be the British ships on the Oslo Ford, and they won't fire on the Norwegians. Jonathan's compassion for Irina seeped through his words. The couple had nearly lost each other in Poland before they married 6 months ago. Trouble seemed to follow Irina, landing her in unusual predicaments. While fleeing Poland with a carload of children, her automobile broke down, she twisted her ankle, and later she nearly died of pneumonia. And these were only the recent mishaps. David glanced at Natalie and shifted in his chair. Were the two of them intruding on the newlyweds' privacy? But if he left, he might miss any news updates, and he'd definitely miss Natalie. Nope, no chance he'd go back to sleep anyway, so he would stay put for now. Natalie moved to the end of the bed, close to David's chair. Although shadows hid her face, she appeared calm, her normal, unruffled self, which is why she was such a good fit for the American Red Cross. They were lucky to have her. He and Natalie had tickets to fly to Amsterdam later that day. Then they'd board a train for Paris, where she would change trains for Bern, Switzerland. David was scheduled to return to duty with the French Red Cross as soon as he returned to France. It was no small miracle that he'd obtained permission to travel to Norway for the wedding. After the war started, the State Department stopped granting permission for U.S. citizens to move about Europe. If those were German ships coming up the Ford to Oslo, he and Natalie wouldn't make their flight today. The only planes flying would be those of the Luftwaffe. David turned to Natalie. What about your father? Should you call him? I'll wait until we know more. I don't want to wake him if this is a false alarm. As a leading official at the American Red Cross European branch in Geneva, Natalie's father would learn about their situation soon, if they were indeed in a situation. Regardless, before David and Natalie parted ways once again, he intended to spend as much time with her as possible. These past days were like old times. If only he could go back in time and change their last months together. Natalie would be his wife now, instead of his ex-fiancée.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.